Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, I'm Matt Kelly.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona.
And this is The Two Matts for the week ending Friday, the 17th of November. A podcast that doesn't spread conspiracy theories. It is a conspiracy.
It is a conspiracy, too.
We should flag up immediately that we've got the wonderful Dom Jolly in the
second
half. Yes,
talking about conspiracy theories. Yeah. So that's a very interesting...
That's what that's all about. And he is genuinely everything he hoped he would be.
He's fascinating.
But we have a great chat at the beginning, don't we,
about all the batshit stuff that's been going on with Rishi Sunak, Suella Braverman, Rwanda, James Cleverly. I mean, it's just a sort of cornucopia of batshittery, isn't it?
Oh, cup runneth over, doesn't it, with absolute batshit creations.
Batshit, yeah. So,
I think you've really nailed it.
So
batshit. Ah, okay. What about... We'll call the episode Batshit with Dom Jolly.
Love it.
Okay. So, this is The Two Matts, episode 22, Batshit with Dom Jolly.
Enjoy.
So, Matt, what are we going to talk about this week?
Well, our cup runneth over, really, doesn't it? I mean, where to start? Well, let's start at the end, sort of. Yeah. Not quite the end, but with Rishi Sunak's press conference in response to the Supreme Court ruling on Rwanda. Maybe we could ask the third Matt, our producer, to play a little clip of that. That will get the ball rolling.
I told Parliament earlier today that I'm prepared to change our laws and revisit those international relationships to remove the obstacles in our way. So let me tell everybody now, I will not allow a foreign court to block these flights. If the Strasbourg court chooses to intervene against the expressed wishes of Parliament, I am prepared to do what is necessary to get flights off. I will not take the easy way out.
So totally in control. Nothing to worry about
totally
here, folks.
Totally in control, long-term decisions. so there he is. He's saying, on the back of the Supreme Court having... rejected the Rwanda appeal and from the government saying no way. Sunak says, right, I'm going to pass emergency legislation. I'm going to pass a treaty. I'm going to get a treaty with Rwanda. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to just ignore the courts.
I'm going to take 30p Lee Anderson's advice and just crack on.
I mean, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but I at least admired... Lee Anderson's honesty yesterday and saying, let's just ignore the law and get on with it.
Yeah.
Because there's a critical mass growing in the Conservative Party of that's what we should do, just ignore all these things. But Sunak can't bring himself to say that, so he has to pretend that there's a rational process in all of this, which is that, oh, you know, we were working already on a treaty and we're going to pass these laws. And, I mean, talking to Tories last night, they're having horrible Vietnam flashbacks to September 2019 when the Supreme Court ruled against Boris Johnson on the prorogation of Parliament. That was over Brexit, and that was Lady Hale then. And now they've got Lord Reid, who's the new president of the Supreme Court, saying, because I lead an active social life, I read the whole 56-page ruling, so you all don't have to. But it was really unnecessary because it can be summed up in, you're having a laugh, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's such a mess.
It is a very, very, very clear ruling. Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, these rulings tend to be notwithstanding the hit for, you know, but this wasn't. It was, look, the Rwandan system is not ready or reliable to take in these asylum seekers. And the real killer is that the judge has made absolutely clear this is not just a question of the European Convention on Human Rights, as important as that is. There are all sorts of other treaty obligations we have.
Including the United Nations on refugees.
UN Refugee.
Are we going to walk away from that as well?
The Convention Against Torture. We're going to, you know, the Convention on Social and Economic Rights and many more. So
it is, to coin a phrase, batshit crazy.
It is, as James Cleverly, the new exciting new Home Secretary, is alleged to have said before he took the job, batshit crazy. The response of many Conservatives, and it's explicit actually in some of the press that there's been overnight, with recording this on Thursday, is that basically we have to now withdraw from all these international agreements. Well, okay, let's take the ECHR just for instance. There are two countries that have ever left the ECHR. One was Greece when it was under the military junta in the 70s, right? 60s and 70s. And the other was Russia, which was expelled last year for atrocities in Ukraine. Do we really want to be the third in that list?
Just incredible.
I find it shocking that it's even on the table, because the definition of national sovereignty seems to me to now have become, in the eyes of many Conservatives, sort of total isolation.
Well, the problem they've got is they can't blame the EU anymore.
No, they absolutely can't.
Because they would have blamed the EU. It would have been very convenient. Rishi would have said, this is far too complicated. We'll kick it into the long grass and just blame Europe, right? We'll blame Brussels. And they can't anymore because Brexit. Well
and,
done.
You know, I saw Danny Kruger, of MP, who I think we were going to be hearing quite a lot from, and leader of the New Conservatives.
Something to look forward to.
Whom we've spoken of before on this podcast, an ally with Miriam Cates, the MP for Gilead, and he was saying that we don't need these treaties because we've got such decent laws in the UK. This is an amazing way of approaching the world, which is the reason after the war with the Holocaust and various other atrocities that we all agreed in the international community to set these standards, these global standards, was precisely because you cannot rely on nation states abiding by certain minimal standards, and it's quite helpful to have.
And it's worth pausing there just for a second, because why can't you rely on them? Because the immediate microclimate will always take precedence in a politician's head. And that's precisely why we've got these supranational agreements that hold people back from just abusing them when it suits, which is what we're now seeing.
And it's really, really important. And the deeper sadness and irony is that up until quite recently, the UK was always one of the countries in the forefront of leading.
Right.
You know, we had a up and down relationship with the EU, of course, which led tragically to Brexit, but we helped to draft the European Convention on Human Rights. We were very involved in a lot of these UN conventions against torture and so on. You know, we very much were one of the countries in the West that said there have to be moral minima. You know, there have to be things below which, you know, you cannot go.
Yeah.
And now we have the party that is supposed to stand for the rule of law and all that sort of good stuff, saying, let's just get rid of it.
Yeah, and the one person we haven't mentioned so far is the architect of all of this, Suella Braverman.
Yes, absolutely.
Who somehow, through Rishi Sunak's unprecedented ineptitude, has managed to control the narrative on what went wrong here.
No, absolutely.
You know, unbelievable. I sent you a note saying I thought it was a reverse Mark Antony. And what I was referring to, for those less pretentious than I, is of course Julius Caesar, where Brutus, having stabbed Caesar, comes out onto the forum steps and says his piece to the Roman people, wins them over, then crucially makes the mistake of handing it over to Mark Antony, who was Caesar's mate, who then, through the rhetorical genius that Caesar puts into his mouth, convinces everybody that Brutus is the villain, right?
Yeah.
And this is a reverse Mark Antony, where Rishi Sunak allowed Suella Braverman to get the narrative out there and to make it all look like it was his fault. She has set the narrative, allowed everybody to think, Sunak is a guy who's got no eye for detail. That's an interesting question, because that's his big rep, yes, is that he's across really all the detail. Has ignored the detail required to front up the, what would happen when the Supreme Court did this, which was looking like an inevitability. So he's totally been lackadaisical and no eye for detail. And painted herself as the person who was crying out in the wilderness saying, Sunak, this is going to go wrong. You need to prepare.
Absolutely.
If he'd have waited for the Supreme Court judgment and then sacked her saying, listen, this was her job, her thing to push through, and she's failed with the litany of other crimes she's committed lately. This is now too much. It's incompetence. Off your pop. Her reaction then would have looked like somebody who was just who'd messed up and was really, really sore about it. But ultimately, it was her job and she'd messed up.
Yes, I mean, and as we did a supplementary podcast on the day that she was sacked and David Cameron became Foreign Secretary. Remember that?
Those happy days.
You know, that he saying that Sunak had clearly been very rattled by the weekend and needed to get, in his view, get rid of her. But as you say, Matt, I mean, the letter that she wrote, a lot of people said it read like the letter of a jilted lover, which may be true, but actually it was pretty detailed. And one of the things she said was that Sunak was guilty of magical thinking. And up pops last night, Wednesday, Lord Sumption, former Supreme Court Justice, who says it would be constitutionally a complex, completely extraordinary thing to effectively overrule a decision on the facts. What he's saying is you can't just get Parliament to say actually Rwanda is safe.
Yeah.
So, you know, what she said about magical thinking, which is a pretty big charge to lay at the door of a serving Prime Minister, turned out to be true. And I mean, it's a character assassination. I trusted you. This is Suella Braverman. It's generally agreed that my support was a pivotal factor in winning the leadership contest. Completely correct, as we've often noted, last October. Her attempts to get sense into this was often met with equivocation, disregard, and a lack of interest. Either your distinctive style of government means you're incapable of doing so, or, as I must surely conclude now, you never had any intention of keeping your promises. Mm. And then she refers to lots of other things. Wishful thinking as a comfort blanket to avoid having to make hard choices. Yeah. And remember, this is the guy who's just devoted an entire conference to long-term decisions. People have compared it to Geoffrey Howe's resignation speech in 1990. It's not. Yeah. This is hyper-modern character assassination. She is just out to destroy him.
And he has, through his... I had a text from a very well-respected foreign correspondent who put it in a nutshell, said he's just not very good at politics, is he?
No.
And through his cack-handed handling of the timing of her dismissal, he allowed her the space to get that note out and to blame him for what is actually her fault.
Yes.
And that's now the narrative, is that he has screwed it up. She was trying to save it. He could have said, if he'd have just waited, he could have said, she's messed up. It's her. It was her thing. She only had one job to do and
I said on the steps of Downing Street a year ago that I believe in accountability and therefore my Home Secretary, there has to be a change at the Home Office.
The book stops with her.
The book stops with her. But of course, it's been turned around the other way around. Mm. I mean, one of the things out of it which blew my mind was I knew that her support had kind of been crucial to him and he had desperately sought it because he needed her to keep Boris Johnson out the race so he could win.
Yeah.
But the idea that someone who is running to be Tory leader, therefore to be Prime Minister, signs a deal.
A written deal.
With Suella Braverman, let's be honest, of all people, right? Shows weakness and lack of judgment of a absolutely extraordinary nature. And she says in the letter, it's a tiny detail, but it's funny. She says, our deal was no mere promise over dinner to be discarded when convenient and denied when challenged, which is, of course, for political anoraks, a reference to the Tony Blair, Gordon Brown, Granita dinner in 1994. Granita's a restaurant in Islington that no longer exists, and it was there that they allegedly made the deal that fell apart and so on. But what she was saying was, you know, you didn't even have the wit to just take me out to dinner and say things which you didn't, yeah. which you could then renege on. Yeah. You were actually stupid enough to write it all down, that's and here right. it is. And clearly they're going to release, the Braverman camp are going to release that letter. And there's talk in the Braverman camp of a shit grid.
Great.
You know, kind of, you know, things that will come out step by step to make his life more horrible.
If this was the opposition, it would be wonderfully amusing. But it's not. This is the serving government of the United yes. Kingdom. And it's an absolute catastrophe. We look like a joke nation.
Well, I think you've put your finger on something really, really important. Because last night, Wednesday, Keir Starmer suffered what ought to have been a very, very embarrassing rebellion over a motion to, you know,
call for a ceasefire.
Well, I mean, he didn't want to put ceasefire in. Yeah, he had humanitarian pauses and all that sort of thing. And some fairly significant people resigned, including notably Jess Phillips, who's popular and well-known and was a leadership contender. But somehow I think Starmer is going to get through it. And the reason is, to your point, which is that I think Starmer already looks like he's prime minister, which is, you know, he stood firm. There was a rebellion. There were some resignations. On we go.
Yeah.
Rather than Starmer hasn't united the Labour Party. It's a disaster. Now, in normal circumstances, that would have been the way it was played. But so disaggregated is the Tory Party.
Yeah.
That it really didn't seem that terrible.
There's just a level of personal culpability and incompetence that Sunak is triumphant at. And I tweeted, or I did it on the New Europeans account, that, you know, he is very lucky that he isn't the chief executive of one of these Silicon Valley people he sucks up to. Because if he was running a business and one of your core strategies was exposed as having your eye was off the ball, you weren't paying attention, it's gone wrong, all this stuff about we're doing a treaty with Rwanda and we've been working on it for ages is obviously bullshit, right?
If you made up,
any chairman of the company or major investor would just say, mate, you're not fit for purpose, and you'd be sacked. But he's very lucky he's only the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, because you can get away with that shit these days. But maybe for a while.
I mean, it shows yet again the core problem with populism, which is, you know, one of the main tenets of populism is that there are simple solutions to complex problems. Now, I think that the question of asylum, refugees and so on is going to be one of the big issues of the next 20 years, because there are going to be a lot more of them, partly due to climate change. Even if we do hit net zero, we know that there are going to be hundreds of millions of climate refugees alone. There's more population mobility generally.
Yeah.
We're going to need very complex systems, and they're going to have to be supranational. This idea that, you know, you just stop small boats, it looks okay on a lectern, I suppose, but it's silly, as is the idea that you can just send these refugees off to countries which clearly are not ready to receive them. I mean, Rwanda is just not capable of handling the kind of sensitive and delicate issues that are always involved.
Also, the shame of us having to be the ones who have stood up in the global community saying, no, Rwanda's a fine country with no problems at all, immaculately run, and no issues with refugees going over there to claim asylum, which is, we all know, complete bollocks.
You
know,
obviously
we know it is. It's not the place you'd send, despite the fact that they sponsor Arsenal Football Club and visit Rwanda and all. It's not the place you'd volunteer to go to live. And these people want to come and live in the UK, and that's why they risk their lives to do so. You can argue the toss about the validity of that journey that they've made. But what you can't do, clearly, is just say, OK, congratulations, you got here. You go into a country that is far less safe and has notoriety for treating certain people in a certain way, and we'll send you back, as the Supreme Court quite rightly acknowledged, send you back to the place you just escaped from.
Yes.
Obviously, that's a non-starter.
I mean, as a sort of aside, I wasn't aware of the word refoulement. I don't know about you.
Good one. I like that. Could be word of the year.
Word of the year. Meaning to send back to somewhere.
Refoulement
is how it, you know.
Does what it says on the tin.
But what this has revealed is the fundamental dishonesty of the Rwanda project, which was, on the one hand, we were meant to believe that Rwanda was a fine and sunny and happy place where refugees would be perfectly okay. But on the other hand, it was meant to be a deterrent.
Yeah, right.
Which is it?
Yeah, make your mind up.
You know, you can't be saying, yeah, if you come here, you'll go to Rwanda and you know what it's like there. But also, Rwanda is fabulous.
And the final bit of incompetence we should discuss is, of course, this is the day that he actually had, for once, some good news to talk about.
He had what, in a normal number 10, with a normal government and a prime minister with normal length trousers, would have been an absolute slam dunk, which he'd hit his inflation target.
Yeah.
4.6% Office for National Statistics. Now, that won't have fed through to people's food prices in particular yet. You wouldn't want to overplay it. But it's in the state they're in, it's a massive good news story.
I was listening to Emily Maitlis on the news agents was making this really good point, which I mean, I agree with her. I think she was saying, if you went out and asked people on the streets, what are you more interested in, stop the boats or the price of your groceries? No one cares about stop the boats.
Stop the boats is it's the end of the rabbit hole that the Tories have got themselves down with their obsession with identity politics, with race, with ethnicity, with immigration, with integration, to the point where they think that if they stand up often enough and say, we're going to stop the small boats, the public will roar with approval.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think, what it costs to get your basket
and your turkey and your sprouts
and in the days ahead doing your Christmas shopping.
And quite rightly.
I mean, the sense of priorities and the lack of perspective that all this shows is just more evidence, as if we needed it, that this is a government where metal is grinding on metal.
It really is. By the way, folks, if you're not watching this on YouTube, you are missing Matt D'Ancona's beautiful attire, which is a new European T-shirt with the great phrase, it's people, not boats.
How could I not today?
So thank you for that,
Matt. How could I not wear it today?
And if you want to join in with that sentiment, I think we've still got some for sale on the TNE shop.
So they're very comfortable. They're nice T-shirts.
They really are nice. The quality of the cotton is... And they come in...
Quality schmutter, guys.
Exactly.
Award it. Get yourself one now.
So on that outrageous little plug for TNE T-shirts, we're going to take a quick break and we'll see you on the other side with the amazing Mr. Dom Jolly. Tune in. This week's episode is sponsored by The New European, and boy oh boy, do we have a seasonal gift for you if you subscribe.
What's that, Santa?
It is. And I shouldn't be laughing, but it's an absolutely
deadly serious.
It's a fantastically funny set of 6 Christmas cards and a 2024 wall calendar.
Also seriously funny, I'll be bound.
But they are bloody funny.
Bloody funny.
I even wrote some of the gags myself.
Then it's a lock.
It is an absolute lock-in. And you can get those 6 cards and your fantastic wall calendar to give you laughs all the way through 2024. And to make all of your friends think you are the funniest person on the block when they get your Christmas card, if you subscribe to The New European. And The New European, if you don't know, is a fantastic newspaper and website full of great serious political analysis from great writers like the very fantastic Matthew D'Ancona. Do you know him?
Seen here.
Relative?
Yeah, very cousin, I think.
Patience Wheatcroft. Bonnie Greer,
James Ball,
Tannicock, Jonty Bloom,
Will Self,
absolute stellar stuff.
And
Alistair Campbell's diary is an absolute.
It's a must.
It's an absolute must read. And it's also got loads of fantastic cultural commentary and features, stuff, left field stuff you won't read anywhere else. But if you love Europe and you want to get a sense of why Europe is a fantastic continent and a great place we all love, then The New European was literally made for you. So subscribe and join our fight against right-wing nationalistic media and do something positive about the state of the press in the UK.
Yes, sir.
You can get everything we do online for just £1 a week. Or if you like the actual newspaper delivered to your door every single week, then you can have that for another £1. And that's a 75% saving on what you'd pay at the newsagent. Just go to www.theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats. That's www.theneweuropean.co.uk/2mats, number 2, MATTS. Do it now and you'll get your Christmas cards and calendar in plenty of time for the festive season, and you'll be supporting great independent journalism. Thank you.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So welcome back, folks, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by the amazing Dom Jolly, who has a new book out.
Excellent new book, yeah. Called The Conspiracy Tourist Travels Through a Strange Land, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Welcome,
go
Dom.
Go buy it. Welcome, Dom. One of the things that interests me is that serendipitously we're coming up to the 60th anniversary on November the 22nd of the assassination of JFK, which you go in the book to Dealey Plaza in Texas. I know you've been there before, and you call the JFK conspiracy industry the ultimate conspiracy theory. Can you explain what you meant by that and why it's so important as one of the first and most influential conspiracy theories?
Well, it's weird. I'm not sure it is the first because there were, I think when, for instance,
it's not the first, is it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think there's always been conspiracies because we're a conspiratorial sort of people. You know, when Spanish flu was happening, I think there were conspiracies and stuff. But I think it's the first kind of pop culture conspiracy, and I think a lot of that had to do with the kind of pop star appeal of JFK and Jackie. The fact that it actually happened, you saw the film, you saw the Zapruder film. You know, everyone, the shocking moment of it, everyone could remember where they were. And then I think that was just happening as possibly the kind of post-war believing in the establishment and believing in government was just, you know, the 60s were just edging in. People were starting to think that everything was probably not quite as good as it was. Vietnam was just kicking off. So I think it kick-started a whole lot of stuff. And by the time the Warren report came out, I think you were in full kind of anti-establishment 1960s, don't believe the man. And it just, it had everything, didn't it? It had a film that you could endlessly rewatch and analyze. It had the thing we all hate, which is the sort of untimely and suspicious death of this sort of single important person at their prime. But also there were just so many different people that had a motive to kill him. You know, there was an amazing, I think it was The Onion had a fantastic cover talking about all the people suspected from, I think it was LBJ, the communists, Castro,
the Mafia.
Jimmy Hoffa, suicide, the Muppets, you know, it could be anything. So I don't know, it's just endlessly fascinating. And it's very weird when you go there. It's just a weird place.
When you went there, it was interesting that you got talking to someone about the the recent QAnon theory that John F. Kennedy Jr., not the original John F. Kennedy, but the one who died in a plane crash in, I think, 1999, was going to reappear on, the grassy knoll and dispense wisdom and, you know, usher forth a new era where the deep state would be dismantled, et cetera, et cetera. What was that like? I mean, I know you'd been there before. Had it changed the atmosphere in the area of Dealey Plaza and so on?
Well, Dealey Plaza is such a weird place anyway, because in your mind, you sort of think it's going to be completely sealed off like some sort of national memorial. But actually, you know, the street he was shot on is just a busy road in downtown Dallas. Now, someone helpfully has painted a big cross right where the sort of end bullet that you see blow his head up on the Zapruder film is. So if you want to have your picture taken there, someone's done that very helpfully. And then it's become a kind of pilgrimage, I think, for all sorts of people. When I first went there in 2008, it was full of sort of proper hardcore JFK conspiracy heads. They all loved the film, Oliver Stone's film, and they were all sort of standing there hawking their own particular views. This time, I went in 2022, I think early, it was much more QAnon-y, much more Trumpian, and it was America changed from really what the whole book is about to me, which was the conspiracy theories used to be quite fun in a sense, like quite harmless and interesting. And now I think they're a lot more dangerous. And QAnon, particularly, there were a lot of QAnoners there who seemed to be there. And the idea was that JFK Jr. was going to turn up and he was going to exactly that, dismantle deep state. He jumped from being a Democrat to a Republican, apparently, which was quite odd. And he was going to turn up. And anyway, it was all announced and this massive group of people turned up and then they waited and then he didn't turn up. And then there was a rumor, because the Rolling Stones were playing in Dallas that night, that he'd changed his mind and he was going to appear on stage with the Rolling Stones, which seemed a bit more fitting. So everyone went off to the Rolling Stones and he didn't turn up. The whole thing was just very weird. The very strange thing when you talk to people there is you can spot the absolute loons, you know, the sort of ones that are wearing horns and, yeah, and stuff. But it's the really normal people that you're talking to and you get on with them or you find them interesting, and then they just suddenly drop something and you realize that they've got just all these weird thoughts going on in their heads, and it's very odd and unsettling.
Of all the conspiracies that you catalog here and you deep dive into, are there any common traits between the people who fall for them, who revel in them and take them on? What are the common traits of someone who goes for a conspiracy theory?
It's funny, because if you look online, and I spent a lot of time in lockdown arguing with people online, because I had a very close friend who was on a ventilator with COVID, and I was being harassed by sort of COVIDiots and anti-vaxxers, and it drove me nuts. And they sounded stupid. That was the real problem. And I have to say that when I went out and met a lot of these people, one of the traits was they weren't stupid. A lot of these people, if anything, thought too much. They were overthinkers, and they were normally victims of the algorithm. That's basically what happened. I set up a separate Instagram page as a fake conspiracist and followed the usual suspects from Katie Hopkins, David Icke to Right Said Fred. And what's unbelievable is the stuff that comes into you. So my real Instagram and the fake Instagram are living in multiverses. They are completely separate world. So I can totally see how people fall for it. And I think what I learned more than anything was that stuff happens. The world is chaotic. It's random. It's weird. And just things don't make sense. And as humans, we don't like that. We don't like chaos. And so we try very hard to put logic, force logic into chaos. And conspiracy theories really help with that, because they give you solace that things that have happened aren't your fault. That there's you know, it's someone else, it's some evil power that's controlling everything. And also it gives you, a lot of people feel very lost at the moment, I think, in the sort of new world we live in, very polarized, very powerless. And I think the idea of having this secret knowledge, and if you get into conspiracies, you tend to go for all of them, and it becomes your tribe. James O'Brien talks about footballification of life and stuff, and it's very much that. It becomes your identity, your tribe. It becomes who you are.
You say the word kernels of truth in most conspiracy theories, which I think is absolutely spot on and one of the reasons that so many of them prove so adhesive, but not all. And one of the chapters I enjoyed most was when you and your wife went on a, a trip to discover whether Finland exists.
Yeah.
Could you give us a capsule account of your findings on this exciting voyage?
Well, firstly, I felt very bad for my wife because I've written, this is my fifth travel book, and I always go off on my own because that's how you should travel, right? You should just go off and get in trouble and shouldn't be with anyone you can sort of spend time with. But my wife insisted, our kids had gone to uni, that she had to come on a trip. So I said I'd organise one, and she said, where are we going? And I said, Finland. And she looked a bit disappointed, I'll be honest. And then and then she said, why? And I said, because it doesn't exist, and I have to go and prove it does. And she nearly backed out at that stage, but she did come with me. The reason I did it, there's an amazing graph done by this woman called Abby Roberts that basically delineates the sort of levels of madness of conspiracy theories. So it starts with ones that might be true, you know, need a bit more conversation, and then they really go into the sort of top tier of mad, anti-Semitic, you know, evil nonsense. And sort of in the middle of this pyramid, I saw this thing that said Finland doesn't exist. And from what I could gather, it started as a Reddit thread, as a lot of things do, and it was sort of a joke, I think. And the basic premise is that in about 1917, Russia and Japan decided to invent a place called Finland so that no one would go there to fish, because what they claim is that it's actually just part of the Baltic. So it meant that Russia and Japan could divide the spoils and have the fishing rights to the place. And the fish, weirdly, were then transported to Japan on the Trans-Siberian Express under the guise of Nokia products, which was very close to my heart. So I thought that was great. But I thought what was interesting about it, I was easing my way into conspiracies. I thought actually one of the problems with conspiracies is arguing with conspiracy theorists. And actually, it's very difficult to disprove anything because they tend to just say, well, you're in on it, or you would say that. So even Finland, I landed in Finland. It said, welcome to Helsinki. There appeared to be a language that was Finnish. The gentleman who stamped my passport, I said, where am I? He looked a bit confused. He said, you're in Helsinki in Finland. I said, but am I? And the Finns are quite odd, isn't they? I think he quite liked the question, but he said, yes, you are. And I said, can you prove it? And he said, not really. He said, you could look in the phone and your map. And then, of course, if you're a conspiracist, you'd say, yes, but who owns, you know, who set the phone up? Who set the map up? And so supposedly where I landed was either somewhere in Sweden or Russia. And the people I met were crisis actors or just people being paid.
It's like a sort of Baltic Truman Show, yes? I mean, is that, would that be?
Very much so. And actually, the Truman Show was just very big part of conspiracies because it was also the flat earth thing where I went off to the edge of the flat earth, and that they believe very much in that sort of thing when Truman hits the wall in the Truman Show. So yeah.
Yes.
But basically, no, I did not. I mean, I do believe Finland exists, if you want my findings. I think it seems to be there, but I couldn't prove it. I mean, it's very odd. And a lot of Finns, weirdly, are aware of that conspiracy, and I think it tickles them. They're very doer surrealists, the Finns. They're quite odd, or whoever is playing the Finns. And so they quite enjoy discussing it and teasing you and saying, you know, you don't know, I might be Swedish, or it's very odd.
When you said, Dom, that they were a lot of conspiracy theorists were victims of the algorithm, is it possible there's a conspiracy beneath the conspiracies? You know, is somebody manipulating all of these people deliberately, coherently, to precisely this aim, do you think?
Well, this is when your head starts to explode, when you go onto these sort of multi-levels of conspiracies. and yes, very much, it possibly, you know, that actually is not a ridiculous theory. If you think about what Elon Musk is doing with, I refuse to call it X, with Twitter or whatever, you could see how, if you were politically minded or you were trying to get various stories across, that you could, I think, I mean, I don't know how you do this because I'm completely non-technological, but I'm sure that it is possible to drive. I mean, certainly it's possible if you're following GB News, for instance, you tend to get sent a vast amount of stuff that GB News wants you to watch. So I think on that level it is. Yeah. I think that the thing I really found with conspiracies that really knocks them down in the end is this idea that everyone has that there are these massive forces, you know, secret forces controlling stuff. And my problem is I'm not denying that governments, corporations have definitely lied and been terrible, but they just seem to get the wrong end of the stick of who they're targeting. And my experience of meeting people in power, they can't run parking systems. So the idea that they can run this massive, this massive conspiracy, it seems far-fetched, but I don't know. Maybe the new sort of the new tech, you know, the sort of tech bond baddies like Musk. Maybe they are doing it. I don't know. All it seems to do, though, is just drive me to watch too much Katie Hopkins, and no one needs that.
Well, that's absolutely right. But it is interesting how it's... You said it used to be fun, and you're right that it used to be, you know, a bit of Roswell, UFOs, Elvis, Bigfoot. It was something entertaining, and now it's entered the mainstream of politics. So, you know, more than 70% of Republicans in America believe that the 2020 election was stolen, something for which there is zero evidence. Quite the opposite, actually. I mean, the theory has been tested to destruction. It just isn't true. But they believe it in their hearts. And that's when conspiracy theories start to really have an effect upon real life. That, you know, they're consequential, aren't they?
Well, 100%. It started very much with Trump, I think. But I actually blame Kellyanne Conway. That famous moment when she talked about alternative facts. I think that was a real milestone. The moment you had the fact that she was the presidential spokesperson, but saying alternative facts, that was the moment when you started to have two truths. And once there's no truth, what have you got? I mean, you looked at it in Gaza recently when the hospital was hit and one side was saying that it was the Israelis and the other side was saying it was a missile misfired by Hamas. And no one knows. And both sides have just taken that thing as their truth. And now we just live with two truths. And that seems a very weird new world we're in. And that has direct effects, obviously, on us. And it was the same thing with COVID. You know, I was sitting there visiting a guy in hospital on a ventilator, my age, who very nearly didn't pull through. And I was being told by people that COVID didn't exist. And it's just very odd. You can't prove anything anymore.
Did you come to any conclusions that there was a way to combat this at all? Or is it beyond salvation now? Are we just lost in this miasma of bullshit?
I think we are lost a bit. And with the advent of AI and you know, deep fakes and stuff like that, I think it's going to get worse. One of the things I learned was that it is actually pointless arguing with conspiracy theorists. And it's definitely pointless, or that feels good, sort of berating them or just insulting them. Because actually what happens, it's very much like a cult mentality, or even a religious mentality to a sense, that when you're attacked, you tend to retreat into your bunker. So you're not going to change their mind. And I've spoken to a couple of ex-conspiracists who've kind of come out the other side, and they tended to have the same sort of experience as alcoholics do, really. Like, you hit rock bottom, and then something makes you make that decision. But I think the more you try and persuade people or change them, the more actually they kind of get more convinced. And you see things like Russell Brand and stuff, that, and Trump to an extent, they actually build their own defense in the sense of saying, oh, well, if they come and say that this is all lies, that's because I've got too powerful telling you the truth. You know, and it's madness out there, really. And I don't want anyone to think that this book is serious in that way. I did want to make some serious points, but I wanted it to be funny as well.
It is very funny, but it's also a really brilliant way of exploring the subject, which is by traveling around and talking to people, actually, which is a great way of doing it. But I was wondering, Dom, how it affected you. I mean, what was it like coming off the back of this, you know, magical mystery tour through meeting all these people and going to a lot of places? Did you come back? Did it change you? Did it affect you?
Not massively, because I did kind of, overall, it was just madness. And I do like dipping into madness. I kind of enjoy it. I think the driving force of the book was I used to see all these people online plugging all these kind of weird conspiracy theories. And I used to think, they can't actually believe this. They're either doing it for clicks, or they're doing it because they're on the grift or whatever. And I really wanted to look these people in the eye. My real ambition was to sit in front of a flat earther and ask him the question, so you genuinely believe that the earth is flat? And I wanted him to look me in the eye and say, yes, I do. And I had that experience. Spent the first time with a gentleman in Glastonbury, because there's another weird blending between sort of new age stuff and conspiracies. So, by the way, if anyone in your family is buying crystals, that's a gateway drug to conspiracies. But I met a guy. I got his number on the phone. I rang him up, said, can we meet? And he said, sure. And he arranged to meet somewhere in Glastonbury. He said, I'll be wearing an Afghan hat, which anywhere else would have been easy. But in Glastonbury, everyone was wearing an Afghan hat. He sat down and he looked like as though Roger Waters had joined the Taliban. But actually, I really liked him. He was a very sweet, nice guy. But it was just crazy. You couldn't argue with them. And the question you really wanted to ask in the end was, if the Earth is flat, why is NASA, you know, they hate NASA. Why is NASA so determined that it's round? Like, who cares? Like, what are people getting out of it? And you never get that answer.
Dom, you were in, you were one of the contestants on I'm a Celebrity in 2010.
Yeah.
And finished in a very creditable fourth place. So, you know, congratulations.
Thank you.
Belatedly, 13 years too late.
Thank you.
Speaking of conspiracy theorists of a sort, yeah. How do you think Nigel Farage will do?
So I think he's going to do incredibly well, sadly. I think he'll dominate the whole thing because obviously whether you hate or love him, that's what drives you to vote. So he will do all the trials. He'll start to be resented by everyone in the camp because he's basically hogging the limelight. And the real problem is that he's in there unchallenged. You know, like Ant and Dec will probably have some sort of smart question to him, but it'll be veiled in funniness. And what you really want, if he really wants to see this, I'd love to have his nemesis in there stuck with him. That's what you really want to see. I was trying to think who that might be. I've actually got a tiny bit of hope for Grace Dent in there. I hope she's smart enough.
Yes, yeah, she's good. She's a very good journalist.
And she's very really smart.
Good. Alistair Campbell would have been a great
journalist. Oh, I mean, that is box office. You're quite right. Alistair Campbell and him in there, it would have been a murder, but it would be brilliant.
It would have, yeah. That's right. I think Campbell would have ripped his head off. It really would have been, yeah. All right. Well, listen, on that note, thank you, Dom.
Good luck with the book and thanks ever so much.
And we'll just remind listeners of where you can get the book. Well, you can get
all
the book
good
anywhere.
The Conspiracy Tourists Travels Through a Strange Land by Dom Jolly. Highly recommended by the two Matts.
Thank you very much indeed, Dom. Speak to you again in the future, I hope.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
So, Matt, what didn't we have time to talk about this week?
Well, something good entertainment available this weekend is The Crown, the first tranche of the last season. I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
It's just dropped. I don't have a capsule review, I'm afraid, but a lot of people will want to see that. But the other, there's a movie opening, which I have seen, which is Saltburn,
right.
Which is the second film by a rather remarkable director, Emerald Fennell. And that is a kind of twist on the old Bride's Head theme of, you know, guy from relatively lower class or whatever you want to call it background gets drawn into this louche, debauched, aristocratic milieu. And it's got some terrific twists in it. And
right.
and an amazing, amazingly performance by Barry Keoghan. So
fantastic.
I really recommend it. And also, as we've discussed on the pod before, we don't talk enough about class.
Yeah.
Period. Yeah. Generally, not, I mean, on the podcast, but generally.
By the way, have you ever seen, is it The Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Fantastic movie.
What a film that is with Barry Keoghan.
I mean, he is, I think, the next Joaquin Phoenix. Or
it's amazing.
Colin Farrell. And yeah. You'll discover in this one that he's been to the gym.
Oh,
Barry.
Has he? Has he bulked out?
He's bulked out.
Has he?
Yeah.
I saw him on a catwalk in Highbury Fields.
Oh, really?
It was an open air Louis Vuitton show. Was it Louis Vuitton? It was someone, one of these people. I hope I've got that wrong, actually, because that will infuriate their PRs. Anyway,
well,
it was one of these shows, and he showed small guy, but yeah, bulky and broad. Yeah.
Very, very, yeah. big future ahead of him.
Yeah.
So go see that if you get the chance.
And the other thing we didn't talk about was old Pie Face, wasn't it? With your mate and mine, David Cameron, in the Ukraine.
Did not waste any time, did
no,
he?
No, straight over
straight
to see Zelensky.
On a,
yeah.
A plane to see Zelensky, where yeah. I imagined his principal message was, we have not forgotten that there is a place called Ukraine.
Even though most of the population seems to have done. We should do an issue, I think, with the New European, just reminding them that
yes, there is,
stuff
there is,
still
there
going
is a country. I mean, it obviously, you know, very, very, very big moment for Zelensky to, you know, he'll be needing visits like that to cheer him up, whether he was expecting David Cameron. He must be very confused, Zelensky, because first of all, he's had, you know, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss,
Rishi
Sunak, and now apparently sort of in a sort of Doctor Who
Lord Cameron
twist. You know, like David Tennant coming back. Here's David Cameron, right?
What,
what's all
they call it in Doctor Who? The re, regeneration.
Zelensky must be thinking, I need to get more sleep.
I'm going to do him. This is a future coven. You've heard it here first. Him as Tom Baker. the regeneration of David Cameron. That's great. Brilliant. We might do that next week. Well, great idea.
Yeah, the new series starts quite soon. So
brilliant. Well, listen, thank you so much to Dom Jolly. I thought that section was brilliant. He's welcome anytime.
Really enjoyed that.
Get your questions into us and any feedback you've got to the2mats@tnepublishing.com. That's the2mats@tnepublishing.com. Number 2, MATTS. We're back with a new Q&A episode on Sunday. And don't forget our Christmas deal, where you get free cards and a free wall calendar when you subscribe to the wonderful New European. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Matt Hill at Rethink Audio, the third Matt, assisted wonderfully by Maya Siederlund and Ollie Peart. Until next week.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.